Episode commencing in 3, 2, 1. Episode initiated.
Join us this week as we burp teleport on adventures that involve murder, drugs, and the love between a drunken grandfather and his pugnacious teen grandson on this week's episode of Crit and Morty. Welcome and wubba lubba dub dub to the show, everyone. This is your geriatric GM Patrick here, and joining me in a quick adventure in and out 20 minute episode tops are my five spaceship co-pilots and family members, your players. To my far left, don't you say you forgot his name, it's Poopy Buttholy, Buddy Poophole, aka Jabert, jabbering away his jam from.
I knew I was Buddy Poophole.
I've been here the whole time.
What was his name again? Across the digital table from me, just a dude that can't quit flipping through interdimensional cable channels, it's Miles, Megan Believe as Redacted. Good evening. To my right, Summer, ready to kick butt on occasion and save the day. We got Tyler talking his prey deer.
I was muted and I like soup.
He's muted because of the soup.
You're not a soup guy.
He was sucking on soup. To my immediate left, I hope he prepared a Jerry quote because he's the daddest of the dads. It's, of course, Drew trying to play Zilixthel.
You son of a pronk. I'm in.
And across from him, why have one mom when you can have two Schrodinger's moms instead? It's none other than Rebecca rolling with Asher and Sky.
Hello.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Fun. Good times.
Sure. Yeah. The name you were looking for was Mr. Poopy Butthole.
I got it wrong on purpose because no one remembers that he existed. The episode. Buddy Poophole is a funnier name, though.
Total Rickall is one of the most interesting and entertaining cartoon episodes I've ever seen.
And they made a game about it, which we have in our house. There's a card game about it.
My. Got that Rick and Morty merch all up in your house. I definitely had something from the show at some point.
I enjoy the show. I despise the fandom.
Well, I had a Loot Crate account probably in like 2013. So I feel like I have to own something, Rick and Morty.
Can I start off this episode with getting something off my chest?
Is it that little bit of noodle?
Is it the soup you draw?
Soup you just did? Yeah.
Besides the soup. There we go. We got rid of this.
Listeners, Tyler's eating soup in front of us right now. Hence all the soup.
I swear to God, jokes. Tyler, if you burp into the mic right now, we are starting over the podcast again.
Can I tell you how tempting it was to do when he kicked it my way? But I literally was like, I need Rebecca to like actually have respect for me, so I can't actually do this. I would never.
It's good instinct.
No, that's not what this is. This is about the holidays. This is specifically about Christmas.
The holidays.
I was driving and I was listening to the local all day, every day Christmas station.
As you do.
And I decided that just for me personally, obviously everybody can decide whatever they want about their holiday listening, but songs like Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas for You, I decided not a Christmas song, no longer a Christmas song, no longer appropriate for Christmas. Great song. I'm not dissing the song. It's a great love song. No longer a Christmas song.
You heard it here
first, folks.
It
really sounds like you're dissing the song.
And then once I made that conclusion where I was like, this song isn't actually about Christmas at all, therefore not a Christmas song, I started realizing there's a lot of quote-unquote Christmas songs, I'm air-quoting for my friends, that have nothing to do with Christmas. They have everything to do with romantic love.
Well, a lot of those songs are also kind of yoinked for Christmas. There are plenty of songs that have nothing to do with Christmas and then get pulled in or get turned into Christmas songs like Green.
Well,
Slates.
Like a good example of that is My Favorite Things from Sound of Music. That song in the musical is sung during the summertime in a thunderstorm. So it is not a Christmas song. I don't know why people sing it at Christmas time.
You do know why, because we looked this up to find out why. It's because that movie was coming out, or their award season was happening, so they were trying to drum up stuff about it. So they released that song as part of Christmas music to drum up, stuff for the movie coming out or the album.
Well, even like think about like Winter Wonderland. Like it's mostly just about, hey, winter's awesome.
Yeah,
it's not really about Christmas.
It's Christmas adjacent, but there are plenty of places that have Christmas that don't have snow or winter at all because it's taking place in the middle of summer.
So you came to this conclusion about Mariah Carey's song, which
she's what really started this thought where I was like,
what was it that tipped you? Because I would still put that as a Christmas song.
I was just literally listening to it for the 30th time and this year. And I just kind of was like, I just had this thought where I was like, man, Christmas is super in the background in this song.
Am I going to have to burp so that we cut all this?
I'm so sorry, Jabert.
Christmas is brought up quite frequently in the song, though.
Yeah, it is. But I did kind of come to the determination for myself that if just because something takes place over Christmas, like Die Hard, or because it mentioned Christmas in the song, doesn't make it a Christmas song or a Christmas movie.
That's fair, because I am not a diehard for Christmas person.
What does it feel like being so wrong, Tyler?
Without Christmas, the events of the movie Die Hard would not happen. Christmas is an integral part of it, and therefore Die Hard
I fully disagree, but we are not doing that at all. I don't care if you have it as part of your Christmas holiday. That's fine. It's a good movie. Watch it.
Yeah.
Speaking of international...
I watch Shallow, 120 Days of Sodom every Christmas. It's the perfect...
Oh, I'm not gonna Google that.
Oh, you don't know what that movie is. Do not Google that film.
I'm so sorry, Jabert.
Well, we've had such a good time recording so far. Maybe we just skip last time on. You just get an episode re-roll, and you know what? This is a little crazy, but we did level up last week. Why don't we just skip talking about your level 9 upgrades? I know you spent all this time on them, but why don't we just get right into the meat of things?
Yeah, nothing happened for me. So
sure.
Yeah, I know how excited you were talking about level 9. Let's talk about what happens in this episode, because this episode does not start where we last left off, but rather in the frozen confines of the frigid northern extremes of Galerion II's Arctic tundra. We gaze through an endless snowstorm in the iciest section of the world here and see a bulky figure trundling through the snow, powerful steps guiding its heavy armor forward. The figure's walking stick seems to guide it, a light on it, kind of piercing through the snow. As it pathfinds through the landmarks of the terrain here, looking through the ice cavern, across a frozen lake, and across what seems to be a ravine with the destroyed wreckage of a crashed and buried starship. Still onward, this lone figure treads until it comes to an isolated target, a bubble of green and red inside the fallen cold snow. The figure reaches out and pushes inside, where we find once more the quaint little cottage. And upon using his walking stick, which we see now, the snow melting off, it is a magical and technological marvel. This figure walks up to the little red cottage here and raps on the front door with said stick. It creaks open the door, and we follow its magical light in that pervades this tiny oasis and see an ancient-looking figure sitting in the solemn quiet here. Claimer, the hermit, sits with his hands on his knees, kind of waiting, perhaps, for this to happen.
I suppose the cat was out of the bag after that downed vessel. And those other folks came by. I knew I might be getting more visitors.
The visitor that he has here indeed creeps forward, silently still, not saying anything, and perhaps bewilderment of what they are seeing.
Oh, by any chance, you didn't come across this place by accident, did you? That weapon you wield, where did you get it?
As indeed the snow has sloughed off this magical stave, we see a very familiar relic, and as the helmet of the armor opens, a familiar face. For this is none other than the Spear of Fates, wielded by none other than the Paladin of Serenray, Edras Varanus, who seems as surprised as anyone, including Tyler, that he is here. Tyler, you're actually playing Edras. Go.
Please tell me I came all this way out for the legendary soup that you make.
All right, I'm not going to lie. I do have in my notes that he was making stew, which is similar to soup.
It's soup adjacent, but let's not say that all stews are soups, please. All stews are soups.
A stoop soup.
I think that stew is a Christmas soup.
Oh, no,
We had a huge argument before we started recording, everyone, by the way, about is ramen soup? And I said, no, ramen's ramen. Ramen's ramen, insanity. Baby. Ramen's ramen.
Now we just need ramen served with a hot dog on top, and we're going to have a real argument on our hands.
That's a sandwich soup.
Tyler Edross looks a little confused, and the ancient figure that he's meeting for the first time here says,
that weapon, that is not something I have seen in millennia. It was wielded once by a knight of old, and the last time I saw it, I believe it was going to be used to kill someone, one of my ancestors.
Well, I came into possession over it in a ship commanded by the undead, where I took possession of it and have wielded it in the name of Sarenrae, cursed as it is.
It brought you here, guided you to this place, perhaps to kill me as well. Maybe instead we can just... Do you want some tea? Chicken? Maybe a little stew? I have stew. Sorry, no soup. It's real thick. It's almost porridge-y.
Is tea just leaf soup?
Yeah, I'm having coffee bean soup right now, Drew. Yeah.
You sound crazy.
We're getting really close to everything as a fish.
Or is soup just pea stew?
Chunky tea?
Yeah.
I don't know. Tea. But there probably should be a mint soup, and I don't think there really is.
Yeah. There is.
Is there a mint soup?
Yeah,
I mean, there are soups that have mint in them, for sure.
No, well, I want.
It's certainly not a mint soup.
No, I want it to be mint soup. I want it to be like
the definition of soup is extremely broad. A primarily liquid food, generally served warm or hot, that is made by combining ingredients.
Oh my God! How are we really doing this?
It's the most general description of like water food that you can have.
Ear poison.
Good. Because that's my Christmas present to everyone.
Somebody play this for some health CEO somewhere.
Oh my goodness. Jabert, I appreciate your joke, but don't interrupt a soup guy when he's given a definition of soup. Miles is our soup song, our soup expert.
I apologize, Miles.
Your majesty, please.
All right, no, Miles, pump the brakes.
You called me the soup king. And
porridge.
No, I said soup guy. And then,
before we started recording, it was king.
Okay. It was king. Tyler, does Adros have anything to say here? Indeed, you feel like you've been following the Spear of Fates for some time. Perhaps also maybe just a little voice in the back of your head saying that you should check out this part of the world.
I'm happy to share some sustenance with you. I indeed have followed the spear here, but I'm not so quick to lay down Sarenrae's judgment.
That's good. It looks like you're one who has laid down much judgment in the past. Perhaps it's time ye less be judged. I don't know. I would love to talk about all your adventures and lasers and starships and all the crazy things that you have. What was it you said your name was again?
It's been a while since Adros has maybe had to introduce himself to somebody.
You look around. There's no holographic projectors. There's no TVs in this hut.
Yeah. I am Adros Varonis, the divine champion of Sarenrae.
Well, Eddie, it's nice to meet you. Have a seat by the fire and let's have a chat while we have soup. I mean stew. It's definitely stew.
Definitely stew.
We exit the scene, perhaps to return to at some point in the future, and return to Viridian Colony. And we will have watched over the last few days as Midnight Squad said their fond farewells after returning both the Peridot Peregrine and its crew back planet side after the destruction of the Swarm Outpost, the Swarm Station infestation orbiting high altitude on Waydana 6. But indeed, a member of the squad has fallen, for after the release of the giant spirit energy from within the swarm platform, Praedir fell unconscious into what was seemingly a coma, but your undead leader showed almost no signs of life in that time.
Somebody, Tyler, get him some soup.
You just pour it down his.
Yeah,
he needs you're pouring soup. It down his throat while he's whispering the definition of sickness.
My favorite thing about Jabert is he'll call something ear poison, and then immediately.
Oh, it's only ear poison if someone else does it.
That's the idea. Yeah.
So good, I love it.
Get this man clown chowder in his.
I'm just happy that I got to make a new character. Praetor's finally put to rest. Never have to worry. I didn't bother leveling them up to level 9 because, you know, obviously they're gone for good.
Yeah, no, Tyler, Praetor is not gone. In fact, your brain is still very much active. You've been locked in a hellscape of apocalyptic scenery in your mind for days now that has felt like years, something you've experienced before in the stasis chambers of the sieve. It looks like a Rob Zombie video. 90s Rob Zombie.
Are we talking like Dracula or Living Dead Girl?
Zombie video, yeah. There's like, you know, jump scares. There's like crazy cuts like from Event Horizon, you know. There's just like,
it sounds more like a White Zombie video.
Yeah, that's what it was. But Rob Zombie directed them, right?
I don't know if he directed them, but I mean, he had certainly a creative voice in them.
But yeah, it's in time revelations that you're seeing over and over as humanoid beings seem to be roasted alive by a blasting black radiation that seems to darken and boil flesh and reveal undead monsters that lurked within them, perhaps within their bones since their very birth. We fall in now behind this, to see you see your fellow council members in real life, standing sentinel, each of them. maybe it's not all soup. Maybe there's tea, maybe there's other things, but standing outside or in your bedchamber, taking turns on what almost feel like funeral rites at a mausoleum because you are cold and unmoving, but the rest of you seem to be hoping for recovery. We also see here Ezra and Shire, the Ahsoki Kells Feldspar over the next day or so after you get back helping out. Kell says,
he's been in this state for several days, you say? We're going to have to make an announcement soon and choose a replacement leader if he doesn't stir up. I nominate myself, obviously, so I'll get started on that campaign. We don't have to do another vote.
Ezra and Shia will come in and say, I just don't understand it. You guys say you fought through all those swarm components and he was just fine and then he collapsed? It sounds like maybe something more psychological than or spiritual. Maybe you guys can just, I don't know, talk to him. Say something, you know, explain how much he's needed here and, I don't know, let his brain rest up. Huh?
You gonna bring me back with the power of friendship again?
I mean,
this
if it
is
worked,
what you did the first time.
12 times. Yeah, no, this just, I would like to hear what your four characters have to say to the unconscious Praetor here, who seems to be going through it. How you might try to coax him out of his stupor. We can make a game out of this if you want, or make some skill checks, or you could just, you know, say what your character would say. Who would be first? I imagine Jamfram, you're just not leaving his
side. Oh, yeah, I'm sticking by his side the whole time, making sure, just in case somebody was trying to poison his food. His liquid food. He's on a liquid diet only. And in case somebody's trying to poison it.
75% of everything that's brought to him.
Yep. I
just to make sure it's not poison.
I'm keeping an eye for any ne'er-do-wells. And I'll introduce people as they come into his room to him. Because he cannot open his eyes, but surely he can hear our voices somewhere in there. Who knows what the undead dream of when they are all in a coma about
what
it.
What dreams might come.
Yeah.
What dreams might come.
But indeed, I will. I sit by his side and I'm of little words, but I show my affections through my actions, caring for him and making sure he turn him so he doesn't get bed sores and, you know, changing his diapy.
No.
I change his diapy.
There's nothing to change, but yeah.
That's fair. Good. Well, good. I change it. It's a quick job.
Ezra and Shark comes over. It's like, you don't need to keep doing that every
hour. You don't
need
to keep taking his pants off.
We're wasting a lot of diapers here, bud.
I would,
let me do it.
Asher and Sky would come to visit Praedir. I think Asher would you know, quietly speak to Praedir and say, Praedir, I know that you're not the most optimistic person, but I'm trying to keep up my optimism on your behalf in this trying time. I really need you to return. I don't trust anyone else. We need you here. And Asher, not that it necessarily does anything, but would take this moment to transfer some of her tattoo to Praedir, and perhaps on his hand he has the markings of the current sky on him. If it would help, I can stabilize him, but I'm guessing that doesn't do anything right now.
Just continuously stable. It's like, you're not dying on me today. No way. No. Drew Miles.
Praedir, no. I have poured my essence into you at least once.
Whoa. Whoa now.
Pun intended, my
friend.
This
is a family-friendly podcast.
They say that I was going to make a soup joke, but I'm going to retract that. I just don't know that I have the power to do it a second time. I need you, my dear friend, to pull yourself out of the depths. And I have a drink waiting for you.
Miles redacted.
Redacted. Sigh. I'd just be like, it would be slightly more boring without you around. However, should death be chosen, a bone broth could be procured. The choice is yours.
He just said he's going to make you into soup. Gross, but...
stay on theme, baby.
Accurate.
Nice. More like a bone tea, really, but...
yeah, I was about to say, everyone knows undead bones make an excellent tea broth.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Tyler, as Praedir is entering into his 1,000th reiteration of the same kind of doomsday vision, this time you watch your allies here in Viridian being consumed like a giant creeping atomic blast made out of black flames and shadows, slowly advancing to take over Viridian City. But you can hear your allies' voices talking to you now. This time kind of slows down this advance, and you feel the pull towards oblivion, towards these darkening shadows weakening. And you feel the warmth, the light of your friends at your back. But as you turn to greet them, instead you get flashes of what seems like the vague outline of a happy elven family. A father and mother with a young child. It's very blurry, but you can see, you know, obviously elvish ears. Some happy faces. Then you see flashes of another place that seems very, very familiar to you. The facility to the northeast of the colony. The science laboratory you all discovered in Viridian Colony territory where you passed away. Then you see images of yourself walking down a long hallway in this facility you haven't seen before. You turn around and you watch as you violently shove a scientist in a lab coat up against a dingy, dirty lab wall. You snap awake and see all of your allies here at your bedside, Praedir. Redacted, Asher and Sky, Silix, Jamfram, right there, taking a knee at your side, pouring soup down your throat. What do you got to say, Tyler, as you regain consciousness here? This has been like maybe 5 days?
Bert will look around and say, you know, I am getting a little tired of waking up in a in a bed after being nearly dead. But it is nice to see that all of you made it out of that facility. I'm glad you're all right.
Ezra and Shire claps you on the back. There's, I'm sure, some more exultation, some more cheers here. You see Kels Feldspar like ripping up like a vote for Kels poster. She's like, all right, fine.
I should have made it so fast.
Ezra and Shire's like, ah, it's good to have you back, sir. What happened? What did you die? Was that death again? Or
I'm not sure. I didn't. Part of it certainly felt like death, but not like the first time. I was shown a great many visions, a great many deaths,
the deaths of a great many worlds and places, this felt strong and felt like a lot longer than just a few days.
Okay. I mean, I don't want to be a bummer here, but does any... Do you ever have any night dreams, Brady? Or it seems like they're mostly pretty big bummers. Maybe we can get you some tea before you go to bed next time.
Well, that would be lovely, but what concerns me was the timing of it all. I mean, why would I suddenly lose consciousness after the brood host?
Actually, I should ask. Because Praetir, did I feel that at all? Did Praetir feel that at all? Because, I mean, from his perspective, he was just kind of hanging out, and then we felt the cosmic ripple, but, like, would he have understood that?
Yeah, you saw grim tendrils reaching out from the very sun of the Galarion system, from the Waydana system here.
Grim tendrils.
Instead of crepuscular rays of light, I believe is how I describe them, they were like almost reaching hands of shadow that were playing across this negative version of the world that Praetir got a glimpse of the universe. So I don't have any picture of this for Tyler's edification, but a white universe with black stars, the planet, all the colors flipped, and the sun was a black and blue purple orb, but instead of a ball of fire, it was a expansive maw. It was almost cosmic horror in nature, a unending appetite in the middle of space that seemed to be reaching out as soon as all the souls released from the swarm platform. Tyler, Praetir saw that energy releasing from the swarms, as well as some of the members of Midnight Squad. But yes, you, instead of being super stoked about all those souls being able to go to the Boneyard or wherever their final destination was, you saw perhaps what the creature on board the Aslanti station described as Misaxenoi, the devouring shadow, the great hunger, the culling shadow. It's as hard to describe to you as I'm sure Praetir has putting it to words for his allies, unless you're seeing what Praetir sees. Like everything I just described, I'm sure Tyler's character can try to, but I don't know. There's no art for it, so this is what you're getting, guys.
Yeah.
Exactly what our podcast listening audience is getting as well.
Yeah, I don't know how much Praetir would want to describe, but just say that, you know, it's concerning that when the emanation of all this power occurred, that it just took me out completely. It's, you know, that shouldn't happen. I mean, I shouldn't have that sort of connection.
Thoughts from the rest of you, or things you want to discuss about your latest mission? You guys met up with some universal legends here with Midnight Squad and took out the swarm. Rebecca, how's Asher and Sky doing after finding out perhaps what the swarm indeed did with your mother's Kerakande?
Yeah, I think that they are understandably horrified. They already knew that the swarm took everything from them as far as their family is concerned. And now to be parading around with the mark of their mother, I think would be just salt in the wound, I suppose.
You could bring it back with you. It did pass away after it was taken off of the swarm component in charge of the station, the Clindat. But yeah, I don't know. Is there like burial rites among the Tree Zarka? What would you do with it?
I was going to say, I mean, I think that whatever Tree Zarka, you know, however they would bury their dead, I think that
you're like the only person in history that's going to play one. So you make it up.
Yeah, what do they do? I guess it's up to me.
This is going to be canon now. They water-based species? No.
Trisiarca? No.
I'm thinking of one Sethlax. It's kind of...
I don't know. I feel like having the mark emblazon something that you cherish would be a more respectful way of remembering the Karakande and the Treziarka that it was attached to, as opposed to, you know, burning it or whatever.
Mounting it?
Sort of. I don't know. I was thinking sort of like having
a frame.
Yeah, I mean, having sort of like, it's sort of like having an urn, right? That has remains in it, something similar. But yeah, having having something that is a cherished, I don't know, piece of jewelry or something that you can sort of carry with you and look at and remember.
Yeah, I feel like maybe that's something that they can do because it is like a big old single cell organism that I think if you cut off a piece of it, it would kind of reform into like a smaller version. So you can have it in a small vial, small locket.
Yeah.
Do you want to investigate it at all? It seemed like they were, the swarm, keenly interested in using it, in replicating the whatever power it had.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to research that, but yeah, I would like to try to understand why the swarm, you know, what they were intending to use it for, other than just to recognize their own or, you know, as a uniform or something.
Yeah, I think we discovered a little bit about it on the station, but if you want to spend some time and maybe, you know, bring in some of the other scientists you have access to besides Redacted, your Veeches and Mystics and things like that, Liu Shu and folks.
Redacted is perfectly fine.
Well, if you want to spend some time, maybe a week or so later, you can get some results and indeed find out, confirmation of what you saw. They seem to be replicating the features, the designs of the Karakande, and integrating it into the swarm components that were being bred at that station. They were not making Karakandes themselves, but they were putting the tiger striping on the backs of the swarm components, and it seemed like it was giving them a bio-magical enhancement. And indeed, you have like some ways to somewhat test this radiation source that you've detected in a few different places on the planet, including the Marizaw facility that you found to the north where Praedir was killed. In replicating that radiation, it seems that the samples were highly resistant to it. So that is the element of the Karakande that they were incorporating into the swarm components, was a heavy radiation resistance.
Do we know if they somehow manipulated the Karakande? I mean, like, Asher and Sky didn't exhibit any kind of resistance, right?
Do you want to test Sky?
Sure.
Go through the same battery of tests?
Yeah.
Indeed, as you go through that process, they are kind of mother-daughter clones and exhibit a lot of the exact same resistances. Perhaps it seems somewhat dormant in Sky. Maybe it is something that they unlocked with some genetic tampering, but all the same kind of markers are there in your Karakande, as this was just as you were the daughter of your Treziarka mother, this is the offspring of your mother's Karakande.
Interesting.
But yeah, just doesn't seem super activated. Maybe it's waiting for some kind of trigger warning. Right, you guys have some time to rest. Full hit points, full RP, of course, over the next few days, as you can take some time off, upgrade your weapons. I know Redacted's rebuilding a spacewalker. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it's not too long after that the good time ruiner, Ezran Shire, comes to you and is like, oh, we got another problem, guys. Oh, I wish I had more good news to share with you. I mean, they just opened up a very nice soup hall down the street on the left, but we have no time for that.
Before they can finish, like, no one's there.
Wait, we can have the meeting.
All there is just dust. And
we can't have the meeting there. We have to have it in a secure location. We can have it delivered. But yeah, no, he gathers you and says, this is some big news. We've had for several months now a small survey team in the area of the Geomantic lab doing surveys under our citizen Lizette de Couture. They've taken several volunteers, scientists, and things while you guys have been busy with Project Sharpwing, and they've been examining all the area around there and have just started in on the underground laboratory, going through and getting all the records digitized and brought back. There were a bunch of scientists, mystics interested in maybe replicating that geomantic tech, but you know, they picked up some unusual signals that weren't there during your first exploration. I thought it best to evacuate those researchers and take stock of the structure, but well, this morning we received a message from Lizette, and let me just forward it to your guys' comm units. It is a text message, and it says, "We just discovered a hidden door in the office of the lab's chief researcher. Beyond is a tunnel filled with bones, a large metal door at the end. My team isn't prepared to go any further, so I think it's time we brought in the administrators." which is the coolest name for you guys, and I can't believe.
Yeah, that's our party name, the administrators.
It took us, this is book five.
Book five, the administrators go to the bone zone.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
I think we got our episode title. Write that down. Write that down.
Yeah, it's a regular Goonies adventure.
The communication is accompanied by a attached photograph of indeed a very bleak cement corridor with a grisly scene before it, a reinforced door with what looks like a large pile of bones stacked up against the wall. Tyler, as you're looking at this, Prater, you recognize this hallway as the one you saw yourself assaulting a scientist in just a week before in your visions.
My gosh, it's a hallway I've never seen before.
I thought I'd seen them all, but here's a new
in
one.
My visions.
Thought I'd seen so many hallways, but look at that.
Are you lying? I just said you did recognize it.
Jamfer, quit looking at me like I recognize that hallway. I don't recognize that hallway.
Do you know this hallway?
No.
You and this hallway go way back, huh?
Jamfer,
I remember you telling me at the old campsite how this hallway and you.
I have noticed, always,
always been open and honest with you with all the hallways that I know. Have I ever once steered you wrong on a hallway that I have previously been known for?
I throw a sausage down this hallway and I say, "Look at that slut."
Oh my god. Jeez, Jabert. How could you
break to you?
There is another photo that Ezra Shire has on a tablet that he slides across the table at you all. He's like, "This is a picture of the team of scientists, mystics, explorers that went with Lizette." And well, you better take a look at this, Pradier. As he passes it along, you see a picture of none other. 10 or so scientists. One of them, none other than Thistle, the fun nature loving elf.
Not the flannel elf.
Yeah, she's wearing like a researcher's armor and stuff. It's the most non-flannel you've ever seen her. She seems to be a part of this team.
Hmm.
They Lizette, there's seven people besides Lizette here on the team, and they're mostly newer citizens, but most had good credentials who were volunteering for the work, but they're asking for your assistance.
Well, then I suppose we better hurry and help out.
Are you sure? We just got you back, and I understand that facility is, how do I put this delicately, that's where you died. Are you sure you're okay to go back there?
I mean, to be fair, Ezrin, what else can it do to me at this point, right?
Kill you again? I don't know.
Well, that's sort of par for the course at this point. I've died, I think, three times now. So, you know, maybe I'll find some answers there and figure out the mystery behind this hallway.
Cool. Are you guys loading up the spacewalker and heading out? First lights? After soup?
Obviously after soup.
Okay.
Does that part have to be said?
Any other questions for Ezran before you head out?
I mean, I'm ready to party as long as my captain's got all the info he needs.
This is the end of book one, if you recall, the geomantic lab, the Marizal lab that you guys determined was 100 years old and since have seen in Pradier's memories that he was at this laboratory at some point in time, member of this facility, perhaps 100 years ago. Nobody seems to be pressing the president on these details. this is just something that's happened. You're like, all right, we're going in. I suppose Pradier does not have, or at least Tyler could be lying to you. Pradier does not have any memories of this happening. They were pulled off of a Civ ship with next to no memories of from whence they came. But indeed, that at the very least would probably make Pradier like 140 years old. And besides being dead, looking pretty good for his age.
Old.
Do you guys have any reservations going back to this place? Indeed, pretty scary stuff. The radiation, of course, has subsided since you turned off this dark reactor that was being kind of pumping out radiation from the Earth's core.
Still no. Wish I'd gotten a lot of radiation mitigating abilities in this level up, but you know.
We take what we get, don't we?
There's a, just so I'm saying it out loud, I haven't looked it up yet, but there is absolutely a mystic spell that deals with radiation, and I'm absolutely spending the credits on a spell gem for that spell. So I will look up the exact details later. I've got the money, though.
It stinks. The colony is sold out. It's one of their best sellers. And
Patrick, don't you do this.
They haven't don't been resupplied. It's like,
we're headed to Plostov.
I will steal one if we have to.
We're just going to take a quick 2-day detour to do some shopping on other colonies.
Cue the montage.
No, yeah, getting back to the facility. Nobody greets you when you get there. And as you head inside, the doors are unlocked. The lights are, of course, maybe there's some like emergency lighting that the team has brought with them, but it is silent and no one is responding to your comms. You think you'd be within short range once you get down within the facility, but there's no answer.
How quaint.
This is not a good start, but it's possible that something is just interfering with communications, so let's continue with caution.
Can we have
look at this?
Kind of like a canary in the coal mine, except it's soup that detects radiation that's nearby.
What?
Can we have like a
soup. Or maybe a Geiger counter?
Yeah,
any chance we could get one of those? That we could like maybe poke the nozzle in a room before we walk in.
Oh, I'm gonna control F this document. I'm pretty sure you got one.
I think we actually do have a radiation chamber that we got from this building.
Well, thank goodness.
The writers of this is like, we shouldn't throw them into this adventure without some way to detect radiation, right? And then they gave one and you guys still ran into the room.
Immediately ignored it.
Yeah, so where the team was investigating was indeed this first room here, this administrator's office, where there's all these old kind of geometric readings on these huge reels over to the side here. And the main thing that's different is there is what looks like a secret door alongs the back wall that seems to lead downward. And to get here to the tunnel's entrance, it slopes past this secret wall door, turning 180 degrees after about 100 feet or so downward, but indeed turning into a dingier, kind of less developed hallway. Just cement walls with like a little bit of yellow painted along the side here. Are you guys ready to start exploring?
Yes. Can you put my compact vehicle in there?
Yeah, we're going to another map. So okay. Don't you worry about that.
Frater's going to cast some spells before moving on, but then we're good.
Yeah. As you look down the hallway here, you see what looks like a camera, not powered, of course, but pointing at the descending hallway. and you come across, indeed, the scene that they sent you pictures of, this metal, large metal door with tons of skeletons in front of it. But what else? The door is, I believe it's supposed to be slightly ajar, and it looks like there is some scorch marks near kind of the locking mechanism where the door would have met the wall. Some perhaps explosives was used here, or some kind of device to blast this thing open. But what would you guys like to do?
Who's holding the radiation badge?
Yeah, I'll pull it out and poke it around and see if I get any clicks. Click, 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 click.
Nothing here. This isn't as far away. You know, the top level of the facility has been swept pretty well, and you think if this is not that far away, that if this was radioactive, you'd probably sense it, unless it has some shielding in this part of the facility. But no radiation here.
Okay. Can we investigate these scorch marks?
Yeah, you guys heading up.
Is there an end to the hallway, or does it just continue on?
No. Past the skeletons at the slightly ajar, you know, metal security door here, you can see it seems to be dark inside the facility beyond that, but you don't see any sign of the team that was here. It is deathly quiet.
Can we investigate the skeletons? I'll go and investigate the skeletons.
I'll step up as well.
Yes. As you move up to the skeletons, indeed, the skeletons seem to be interested in you.
These aren't just decorative types. These are clickety-clack types.
You watch as...
This isn't Space Halloween. This is real.
This isn't Spirit Starfinder.
Purple tendrils of magic begin to tether between the bones, stitching them together, but not into individual skellies. Oh, no. But a single mass of limbs and skulls and rib cages, cracked pelvises. When all is said and done here, it stands up over you about 10 feet tall, is made of 40 limbs, and that it uses both to stand up and kind of reach out in your direction.
No.
Holy Harryhausen, Batman.
Show you what we're working with here, and you let me know if you recognize this bad boy. Boop. Boop. This fun guy.
Oh, gosh.
Mom?
Yeah, I feel like I've fought something of this description before, but we might place in the artwork. Yeah.
Well, this is actually from book one of Against the Aeon Throne, this monster. It's called the Carrion Drake, and this is the first thing that I wrote for Starfinder, is this monster.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm.
This is a skeletal version, though, and I just wanted to use the original art, but it is made of skeletons and not moldy undead. Boop, boop, boop. Go. Let me get this guy in the turn order here.
Praetor takes a nap.
Don't you have heal spells?
It's Tyler. You know he doesn't.
All I have is, I have Mystic Cure.
Can't you use that to hurt? No.
Oh, no, I don't think that works in this one.
What a busted system.
Oh, boy. Oh,
the target, it's literally range touch, target one living creature, which they are definitely not.
Yeah.
They're skellies. They are. They're
bastard skellies.
Very much skellies. Okay. Let me roll for my initiative. I don't know why I look at initiative of Starfinder monsters. It's always like two,
yeah, so
four. You're going not first, Patrick. Oh, never mind. Take it back. Take it back now. Roll the 20. It's like goofy. You guys up first.
Well, let's go. We got the 20 out of the way, so that's good.
Oh, boy. No. Natural 20 on initiative. Yeah, you didn't seem to be. Well, I should ask, was anybody worried about the big old pile of skeletons before you walked up to it? Seems like classic trap.
I feel like material. Anybody's going to be worried about a pile of skeletons. A skeleton here or there, you know, that happens when you're but in like it, a weird.
It's at dungeon. The end of a hallway, right? It's at the end of a hallway.
Yeah.
Yeah, my guess is they were trying to. I would have assumed that they were trying to escape from something, and that I don't know, they weren't able to get through the door, and perished. Mm. But not that it was just a sleeping bucket of bones.
No, this
Katamari Damacy of bones.
It might be a little bit column A, column B, but regardless, it's going to 50-50. It's got Asheron Sky and Jamfirmer in front of it. See who it's going to attack on its turn. It is going for Jamfirm. Jamfirm, a big old bite on you as this thing assembles right next to you. No, chomp.
Ah.
18 on the dice. It better be a hit. But yeah, against your KAC, you've got like five skeletal heads that conk, all bite into the left side of your armor, crunch down on your shoulder here.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little bit of piercing damage.
I just realized I haven't updated my EAC or my AC and my name tag for a while. So
23 points of piercing damage. And that is its turn. Yes. Turn one. Redacted. Looks like you rolled the quickest here. Miles, what would you like
to do? I did. Sorry, I'm just updating my KAC and EAC because I haven't done that in probably five levels.
It's been a minute, huh?
Yeah, it's been a hot second. Yep, okay. All right, so Redacted's just going to take a shot at this bag of bones, TM Stephen King, and we'll go from there. Oh, well, there we go. Forward.
When I was pitching monsters to Paizo, this is like the last one I thought they're going to go for because it's so gross. It's so many.
That's probably why they did.
Oh, I love it.
Cool. That's a 19 hit.
Oh, 19 against KAC. It's going to be a miss.
Okay.
Any move action you want to do?
Nope.
That takes us to Jamfirm, right next to this thing.
All right. Let us take a look at this thing. Okay. So, let me look at my little thing here. I've got all sorts of good notes about my character that I leveled up and I just started seeing all these abilities. I was like, I haven't done any of these.
Is this an actual piece of paper in front of you?
Yeah, I got a little.
Oh man, a little note card.
Yeah. All right. Good. 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 Okay. I am going to fight defensively and make a single attack against this guy. Move action, align my shield. Second action, fight defensively. All right. So for me, that is a -3 to attacks. And so I will account for that. And ooh, yikes. Pretty low. Pretty low. I got a level reroll, though.
You do have your level 9 reroll if you want to use it.
The first roll of the...
Well, also, I told you guys you had an episode reroll, free episode reroll. If you want to steal it from everyone first, you can.
No, let's something useful might happen. So I'm just gonna hold it right there, and that's my turn.
Asheron Sky is right next to you, in front of the bone daddy, and is also right behind you in the initiative turn order. Rebecca, what would you like to do?
I'm going to move backwards and shoot it.
Targeting with the trick.
Yep.
You get a +1 to this, by the way.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, for coordinated shot, which I have.
I have.
Oh, bye. Oh,
why?
Oh, my
God. CR 11 or lower on the trick. Is that a trick?
Oh, well, just because I actually made this 100%. Monster, Tyler, you think it's going to be immune to critical hits? What? You know, Tyler, who do you think I am? You know, who do you?
I think you're my friend that I've known for a number of years. And
oh,
Dust.
Yeah. Well, I've known these guys longer. Do you guys think that I made this thing completely immune to critical hits?
It does kind of sound like
almost certainly really a lot like you.
What? How dare you? You know who doesn't think that? Our Patreon supporters. Who, including our flanking buddies who get critical shout outs. Andrew S., thank you so much for supporting us for several years on the podcast. Critical shout out to them because this is a crit. And not only that, it's vulnerable to critical hits.
Oh. Whoa. So it's opposite direction?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you don't know me that well, Tyler.
I'm going to have to rethink.
A
lot of stuff. I guess I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't you sit and stew on that for a while, Mr. bringing soup to the podcast. Rebecca, the CR11, that is also a trick. So we've got a full-on smorgasbord of damage it's taken right now.
Well, it would be 44 damage normally, but if it's vulnerable to crit, I don't know what that means.
66 takes 1.5 times damage.
Ooh.
Sweet.
And it's flat-footed.
Yeah, an important one to note here. Yeah, so not only do you seem to hit a binding part of this thing that is holding it together in its center, once you hit it, like, limbs and skulls on, like, all sides of it seem to fall off, just slough off and clatter to the ground. It's that very not realistic, like, cartoon skeleton sound effect. It's like, it's good. Bones clattering sound effect. But this is happening in real time in front of you. Yeah, it lets out a howl, like a keening wail in the hallway here as we head on to Drew. Zilix's turn.
Zilix's gun forms in his hands, as it so often does, and he's going to shoot. That's a 27 to hit.
Not a super hit, but you rolled an 18 like me. Of course that is a hit.
Only 16 points of damage.
Oh boy. Not all of us can put up 66. But that's still enough to bloody it. Yeah, I can do math. That's enough to destroy about half of this thing's arms and legs and rib cages. More bony sound effects as we go to Radier. Tyler?
Yeah, I'm going to step out of the way. And can you demoralize undead?
You can. It is not language dependent, I don't believe. So okay. It's not part of undead immunities. For some reason, I was just looking at that today, I think.
For some reason? Just
Yeah. Well, no, I think it was just coming up as I was looking at a forum or something.
28 to demoralize?
That is not a success. But yeah, I think we're looking for 30, if I do my math right.
So close.
Very close. Okay. Do you want to make like a knowledge check or anything? You want to see if you can...
Oh, yeah, sure. Why not?
Figure out the skeleton. I can tell you something about this monster I made. This is a variation of it, but make me a mysticism check. Now, that is enough to know. Indeed, this is a giant skeleton dreg. It is an undead creature, obviously. It's a big old pile of animated bones. So what would you like to know about it?
Any special abilities we should be aware of or some along those lines?
Well, the fun one that I made back in 2018, gosh, long time ago, had a fun ability called Grotesque Adaptation where it can gain like a fly speed if the dead things that it was made up of had wings or, you know, a swim speed if it was like mer creatures. But these are all bones and they do not have that ability. Double checking. That would be weird if it had like leathery wings. No, this variation does not. Okay. Has the special ability called Bone Pile, where it can pretty perfectly mimic
a bone pile.
Bones until it stands up. So, but besides that, no special abilities.
All right.
Let's take it to turn number two. This thing is going to. Asher and Sky moved away. That's no fun. It says it does try to move away from any PC who scored a critical hit against it the last round, but it also tries to bite the last PC that damaged it, which both Asher and Sky and Zilix are in the same direction, which means I think it's going to stay where it's at. Maybe just take like a step, and it'll attack Jamfram again. What am I trying to hit here, Jabert? What crazy number with the shield and the... fight defensively.
That's that's what I'm. Oh boy, so you're gonna put me to the test, huh?
Yeah, because I've rolled an 18. Huh? That's as good as I did last time.
Let me check my equipment. What's my shield alignment bonus? +2. So then, you got looking at +5. So 36 is my KAC.
Wow, it's crazy. Yes, I rolled an 18 and just barely hit. So let's roll some damage. 24 points of piercing damage. Second attack. And we're going to go back to redacted.
Right.
It's vulnerable to critical hits, Miles. Just roll natural 20. That's all you gotta do.
Oh, that's all? Okay, cool.
It'll be a short combat if you guys roll like 5 crits. Okay, 4 on the dices. Not gonna do it.
Damn.
Level reroll?
No, episode not this early.
Okay, jam from my Jabert.
Okie dokie.
Let's do this.
Well,
I need to put some stank on these hits and really make it happen. So I'm gonna attack twice. So no fighting defensively this time. Mm. And I'll take a -4.
Hurt 24 to hit.
That is just a hit here. Actually, no, that's a pretty good hit, even because it is flat-footed.
But, oh, nice. Yes. Right. Yeah. So that'll be 27 points of slashing.
Okay.
And attack the second. Can I do it? Hey, another 24. Yeah.
Yep.
This time for 28 damage.
Okay. It is still up, but yeah, you see this thing hanging on by a thread as most of the skeletal rib cages that seem to be protecting this kind of magical core it seems to be built upon or have been slashed away by Jamfram. Asher and Sky, onto you.
Alrighty. I'm gonna shoot it again. I'm gonna move back a bit.
I made the perfect monster for you guys to crit and beat up on, and so glad we get to have a variant of it here in our last Starfinder 1E adventure.
Do I still have a +1 to this?
I believe so, yeah. Coordinated strike?
Correct, yes.
Mine's next to it.
Ooh. CR5 or lower on the trick and a 15 to attack.
Toot toot, knock him doot. Drew, Zilixthel.
Toot toot, how about a boost and shoot?
Ooh. Drew, I need you to kill this thing. I don't have a plan for my turn.
That's 25 to hit.
That is a hit.
Well, and at level 9, my boost goes up to 2d6.
Well, you've already rolled 18 damage here, and it had 22 hit points left. Drew does it. Saves Tyler for having to do it.
Yeah, Drew! I was definitely just looking at the spell list and being like, I don't know what I should really do here. So you saved me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was just looking at it. Against the Aeon Throne, Book 1, Reach of Empire is like... They're getting rid of everything. Starfinder 1E. It's like $7 on Amazon right now. If you wanted your own copy of my first writing credit. I love that book. It's one of my favorite parts of any of the adventures that we've done. Yeah. You can take a look at these skeletons. You can indeed investigate the remains. And Jamfram's hypothesis seems to hold true. Maybe they... The bones are unmarred. It doesn't look like there was like violence inflicted on whatever these beings were. Perhaps died from some nonviolent means. And I think because you've already examined some remains in this facility, similarly, you do place them to be about a century old. And yeah, as you steady yourself, I don't know. Do you want to take 10 Jamfram to burn?
That is not a bad idea. I got a pretty good wallop. Bang up.
But while they're investigating these bones, you can
let's do that.
But yeah, as you crack open the doors, try to get into the deeper facility here, and darkness envelops you once more, Praetor. You get a sense of dread just kind of washing over you as you watch your allies entering this place. Goosebumps on your skin form almost a diamond-like chevron pattern. As if your body itself was trying to make armor to protect you from what is to come, what is to be found, what secrets will be revealed inside the deeper, darker part of the facility. You try to brush this feeling aside as you guys begin your descent into this hidden laboratory. We watch as you read along the hallway walls as you silently pass forward what once perhaps read secure location, leave locked. But now, as you pass by the words, read to be continued. Dun, 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 dun. We have a adventure to explore, a place to explore. Did he think you would ever be back to this facility, gang?
I mean, a little bit.
always kind of hoped.
Reused assets are a classic part of any video game or gaming experience.
This is not real. This is a new map, baby. New map from book five. The whole level of this place we'll never see.
We'll see. When we see the bathroom, we'll see how original this map is.
That's going to do it for this week's episode. We are back. I think this episode might come out after the holidays. So I hope everyone had a happy holidays.
I do too.
We'll be back in here to book five of Horizons of the Vast. This book, by the way, it's called Allies Against the Eye by Jabari Weathers. This is the first part. We just started and we'll get into it more next week. Guys, thanks for playing with me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick.
Listeners, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on the next Cosmic Crit.
Good night. Good night.
Cosmic Crit, the Starfinder role-playing game and adventure paths are trademarks of Paizo. All Pathfinder and Starfinder images are property of Paizo and are used with permission.
Join us this week as we teleport on adventures that involve murder, drugs, and the love between a drunken grandfather and his pugnacious teen grandson on this week's episode of Crit and Morty.
Welcome. Were you saving that, Patrick? I'm sorry. Were you saving that for this?
You've got to start over. No. That is not acceptable.
That's how we go to zero listeners instantly.
I just had soup go into my nose. Patrick, you suck. You're the worst. I'm gonna shit that.
First of all, Ty, that's a soup rookie mistake.
That's a soup rookie. You need to take lessons from the soup master.
There's Italian seasoning in that soup. It burns.
First of all, pinkies up, sir.
Too much. And to answer your question,
I thought it was an accident. I'm like, that's insane that he's just rolling with this. As soon as I heard grandfather, I was like, oh.
I can edit that, but to answer your question, Drew, I always got one in the chamber, you know? I always got one ready to roll, ready to rip. I can't believe you heard anything after it,
because I couldn't, I didn't know it was anything.
Yeah, I stopped listening after the burp. I was like, well, that's the whole episode. God. I'm going to wait for him to start talking.
I'm so grossed out.
It was a dry one, though.
Rebecca, you don't have the, like, massive layer of Patrick Belch armor that we collectively have built up over the years, either due to video games or other IRL TTRPG sessions. I'm sure
I lived with him. So I know.
Yeah, I was about to say, you kept me in the Dr. Pepper. Okay. I can start over, but I don't know. This might be a blooper. Join us